Let us talk with Bethany Harrison here. She is one of the two Republican candidates for the nomination to be the Commonwealth's attorney for Lynchburg. Bethany, good morning. Welcome back.
Hi, good morning, Brian and Mary. Thank you for having me.
Well, we'll see how far you want to go in answering the question, but we talked about this yesterday. It's gotten a great deal of feedback on our Facebook page. Congressman Bob Goodlatte recently got a speeding ticket in Nelson County, and he has a pretty good attorney and his wife, who is pretty accomplished. So essentially pleaded it out, say, hey, presented evidence of having a defective speedometer. And so rather than a reckless driving charge or anything, it was simple speeding. He paid the $300 fine because he had no previous record. The prosecutor, Nelson County, anticipating the questions that would come up, says, look, we treated him the way we would treat everybody else. Is this essentially what he would expect if he had done the same thing in Lynchburg?
It is a common defense to speeding for someone to have their odometer checked out and for them to come in and show that it is off, you know. So that is not unusual or unheard of at all for someone to come in and show my speedometer it shows that I am off by 6 miles per hour, so I miscalculated my speed, and for judges to reduce the speeding tickets based on that.
Now, let me ask you sort of good. Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, is that the kind of thing that prosecutors, though, typically handle, like the Commonwealth's attorney?
Speeding charges.
Yeah.
Well, when it's reckless driving, that's a class one misdemeanor, okay. And we have the option of being involved in those cases. Here in Lynchburg, we're involved in those cases, what we call docket cases, where we're not necessarily opening a file on it when there is representation on the other side. So your police officer is not up there on his or her own having to, you know, answer perhaps legal objections on the other side, make sure that it's fair on both sides.
Now, I'm going to ask you, it's just sort of how things work in a prosecutor's office, and this occurred to me actually just early this morning wondering about this. Do different people have different specialties? I mean, does someone prosecute a fraud and someone else does more violent crimes, that sort of thing?
We do have specialties in the office. However, we make sure to cross-train other prosecutors. We don't want someone to call in sick and no one else be able to handle those particular cases. And it's good for the entire office, for the knowledge base and experience of the office, for everyone to have a hand in each type of prosecution. I know, for example, in gang prosecution, we have a specialized gang prosecutor who is designated to handle these cases because she goes to specialized training. She's been designated as our gang prosecutor for the past 8 years. I've also gone to that specialized training. So we are free also to pick the different trainings we want to go to and try different cases. And it's certainly benefits the entire office to have that experience and knowledge base for our prosecutors to be able to handle a multitude of types of cases.
Well, as long as you've brought up the whole thing with gangs, let's talk about that a little bit. What are the special nature of prosecuting gangs versus prosecuting someone, say, as an individual criminal?
Right. Well, we prosecute everyone as individuals. With gang charges, the actual gang charges themselves are, you can think of them as add-on charges. There has to be a main offense that's committed. You cannot prosecute someone for just simply being a gang member. They have to commit a crime in furtherance of the gang, or if they're participating in gang recruitment, that's something you can prosecute them for. Absolutely, we prosecute people for the crimes they commit, and especially vigorously go after violent felonies. The question there becomes, can you prove that it's in furtherance of the gang? And that's usually the hard element to show. So you might have someone who commits a shooting, and you can prosecute them for being an individual committing that shooting, but can you show it's in furtherance of the gang? Sometimes you can, and sometimes you can't. You can only prosecute the charges for which you have evidence.
Now, on that too, how many, as far as the gangs go, how many are there in Lynchburg, and how many members do they have roughly? Obviously, there's not an exact, you know, census of the gangs or anything.
Right. The last numbers that I saw from the Lynchburg Police Department were a little over 40 identified gangs and a little over 560 identified members. And now they identify them based on self-identification. When people go to prison, they will identify as a gang member, and that's for their own protection. They don't want to be with rival gang members. Some people go to prison and join a gang for protection. And once they identify with that gang, then we track them. Also, the police department are looking out for signs of gang membership. So you may have a group of juveniles who are showing common colors or hand signals, language, or using a particular name that would clue the police in that they're identifying as a gang, but then the question becomes, are they a criminal street gang? Are they out there committing crimes? And that's what they're closely watching them for that activity.
We're speaking with Bethany Harrison, candidate for Commonwealth's attorney in Lynchburg. We're hearing so much about the opioid crisis, the opioid epidemic, and Lynchburg has received grants to help fight the opioid crisis. We had just last week, earlier this week actually, news about carfentanil-laced heroin. So we're hearing about recovery efforts, and we're hearing about EMS crews are EMTs are encountering. What is the, or what should be the Commonwealth's Attorney's Office's philosophy toward prosecuting, say, opioid drug-related offenses?
Well, one of the priorities of our administration is doing our part to get ahead of the opioid epidemic. And you need someone with experience to tackle this very serious issue. I'm a member of an opioid coalition that where the members are people from different organizations and groups who have a hand in addiction. And at the Commonwealth Attorney's Office, you see people who have usually hit rock bottom. They've been charged typically with a felony for possession of heroin or another controlled substance, or they've committed other crimes trying to feed that addiction. We have a new initiative in our office called Drug Court that tries to take these offenders, if you will, and help them reach sobriety. We recognize that they will relapse, and this program is an intensive program for people who are on supervised probation and they're testing positive for illegal substances. So they've already been held accountable for the crime they've committed. But instead of going through the normal probation violation procedures where you're testing positive, you come in, you get your jail sentence, and go back onto probation. And probation does work with them on substance abuse issues. But this is a much more intensive program requiring public accountability, requiring immediate punishment or reward. And also, again, recognizing they will relapse. But the point there is working with our community partners. We work with Horizon to provide the substance abuse treatment aspect. And work with them towards sobriety, also to get a job, to become productive members of society, hoping that at the end of this, they will maintain sobriety and not return to the court system. And that reduces our crime numbers if we can help these members of our society achieve sobriety.
So the argument has been from some sides is let's treat it more as an addiction issue, a health issue instead of a crime, a criminal matter. But it sounds like what you're saying is it needs to be both.
Yes. So every case is determined on its own. You need somebody who is willing to make that change, and with drug court, they have to volunteer for that, and that shows that initial step of recognizing they have a problem and recognizing they want to take steps towards sobriety. That's very important. So you have plenty of people who are in denial. And as the saying goes, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. It's the same thing with addiction. And certainly we've seen people going through addiction and dealing with the fallout from it, you know, since I started here in 2006. And that's always been the issue, is having that person want to make that change. So each case is determined on its own, but recognizing that it is a health issue. But we also have to keep the community safe. We can't just blanketly say, okay, everyone who just has an addiction problem, you get a free pass. We have to see evidence in that person that they want to take steps towards change.
You were talking earlier about experience in the office and cross-training among different sort of, I'll just say, specialties. How long does it take for someone to be an attorney prosecutor till you have a pretty wide range of what you've prosecuted, what you know how to do, essentially?
I would say a good 5 years or more before you really have a handle on a lot of different case types. That's about the point in your career where you have worked as with other attorneys acting as your mentor through more serious cases. And it also depends on the aptitude of that particular attorney. I know going up through the ranks, you know, by the time I had 3 years of experience, I was working in that apprenticeship mode with other attorneys. And you know, that's common for many Commonwealth attorneys' offices, where you are working with a more seasoned attorney on serious cases so that you're learning And there's a lot at stake, that you don't want things to go wrong and a serious violent offender who should have otherwise been found guilty to be let free because a new person, if they're left on their own to try the case, may make mistakes. Mistakes that or problems or issues that they cannot anticipate because they don't have the experience to know what the issues are. So that is why it's critical to have a Commonwealth attorney with experience, because the other attorneys in the office and the community need someone that they can look to for answers, who is knowledgeable, who can handle any case for prosecution and is ready to lead on day one. And certainly I am the only candidate here who has those qualifications.
You certainly made a case for that during the campaign. Your opponent, Mr. Griffin, is, I think he has 4 years and something like that as a prosecutor, and has said that he has plenty of experience. He's at least participated, made arguments in a murder case. Do you really think that he would not have the experience, have the chops to be Commonwealth's attorney?
Correct. He is not ready for this very important position. He actually is just coming up on 3 years of prosecution experience. He was a magistrate for 2 years before that, which is an entirely different role. You're not in court, you're not trying cases, you're not having to think on your feet like you have to do regularly as a prosecutor. He is currently serving in that apprenticeship role to his boss. His boss is the primary attorney on that case he's talking about. That case has not gone to trial. I'm the only candidate here who has tried murder cases, multiple homicide prosecutions with successful results, where the offenders received decades in prison. My opponent has never taken a murder case to trial. And this is a critical position for public safety. The members of this community need someone who is ready to handle any type of case like that on day one.
And as far as the role of the Commonwealth's attorney, how much of it is the actual nuts and bolts, the doing the prosecutions, making arguments, and how much of it is sort of being the face of the office? Sort of having that maybe that sort of larger than life personality and being able to maybe to sort of, I don't know, command the attention of whether it's of criminals or whomever it may be, just have that big public persona.
Yeah. Well, as I've said repeatedly, the members of this community need a Commonwealth attorney who is an experienced leader in the office, a leader in the community, and a leader in the courtroom. You're balancing all of that as a Commonwealth attorney. You are the head of the office. You are the face of public safety in the community. And you need to be able to handle any case for prosecution on day one. And having those community partnerships and relationships in place so that you can effectively put into place plans to deal with crime prevention, or getting ahead of the opioid epidemic, or doing our part to end the cycle of domestic violence. All three of those are priorities of our administration, and I'm the only candidate here who has that experience, has those community relationships, has the experience of a manager in the office. My opponent has never worked in supervision of other attorneys or management. Anyone who has worked in management knows it requires a whole different skill set than doing just the regular job, or anyone who's worked for a manager who has no experience in management knows how challenging that can be. And this is not a job for on-the-job training. You need someone who is able to tackle these very serious issues from day one.
Now, this you are running for the Republican nomination for Commonwealth's attorney, and that has been one of the questions here as far as your relationship with the party. You have been endorsed by the current Commonwealth's attorney, Mr. Doucette, who is a Democrat. Can Republicans be assured that you're a loyal member of the party?
Absolutely. My boss endorses me for the office because he's seen the work that I've done over the past 10 years, and he knows that the overall work of this office is not partisan. He sticks his neck out there to endorse me, even though we have completely different values politically, because he knows the everyday operation requires someone who is an experienced and competent and effective leader, and that I have those qualifications. I've been endorsed by 12 Commonwealth attorneys overall from throughout Central Virginia, 7 Republican and 5 independents, and my boss runs as an independent. My opponent has not been endorsed by a single acting Commonwealth attorney. He has not been endorsed by his current boss, the Commonwealth Attorney of Bedford. He's not been endorsed by his former boss, the Commonwealth Attorney of Amherst. Both are Republicans. Both have seen the work he does, and both do not endorse him for the position, which is certainly speaks volumes about his ability to do the job. The other Commonwealth attorneys endorse me for the office. They know what it takes, and they know that I have that necessary experience to lead this office on day one.
Bethany Harrison, seeking the Republican nomination for Commonwealth's attorney in Lynchburg, and the primary election is coming up on Tuesday. Bethany, thanks so much. We will talk to you again soon.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.